If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Jack Manuel here for another Brooklyn Buzz. And an unfortunate Brooklyn Nets loss as the Nets go down to the Clippers 125-114. And they forgot how to score the basketball. The Clippers go on a 22-0 run in the last 5 minutes of the game. That's 22 points to a paltry zero. Nada, nothing, love, if we're talking tennis terms. I just don't know what the hell happened. They got outscored in the final quarter, 41-15. It just seemed to me that there was a couple of factors that stuck out. One, Jacques Vaughn didn't call a timeout. Like, what? Why? How? When? Who? It boggles the mind that it's something that has been an issue with Jacques Vaughn and other Brooklyn Nets coaches at different times. Like Steve Nash has sort of said in the past, like, I want the guys to sort of work through it. This is nigh on inexcusable. Now, I will get to the players and the criticism that a lot of them so sorely deserve. But, excuse me, in saying that, the coach has a duty and a responsibility to use the skills and tools that they have to affect the game in some semblance of a fashion. As a coach, you've got the ability to call timeouts, you've got the ability to make substitutions, lineups, you know, get a little bit angry and ruffle the feathers, you know, get a tech on yourself or whatever. But the key one that mattered today was Jacques Vaughn just not calling a freaking timeout. The Nets just gave up points after points after points after points. And more critically, they couldn't score to save their lives. Now, credit where credit is due. The Los Angeles Clippers are a very good team. This is a team that's going to be fun for the championship no matter what. They've got a lot of stars, they've got a heap of talent, and their defense locked in. And when their defense locked in, they were switching, they were engaged on their isolation defense. The Nets couldn't find a way through it. Whether it was Cam Thomas, whether it was Nick Claxton, whether it was Mikal Bridges, whether it was Cam Johnson. But going back to that lack of timeout call from Jacques Vaughn, I just don't know what the reasoning is to just not do it. Because a lot of the time, to give a little bit of credit to Jacques Vaughn, the ATO plays that he calls out of the timeouts normally get the Nets something. Whether it's a Cam Johnson three, someone going downhill to get to the line for free throws or a layup. But it just felt like he like froze. Like, what are you doing, Ja? You have a responsibility to the team as the head coach to have some sort of an effect on the game. Now, sometimes players just do their thing and they controlled the proceedings and there's a flow. His substitution patterns were all right and the lineups were all right in the first half, maybe even first 2.5 quarters. But this is what he said to, and this is via Eric Slater, that this is in terms of the fourth quarter offense. That's not going to work, not for our group. We can try it and see if we can beat dudes one-on-one, but that's not how we build built our lead. There's some long, strong dudes across this league, and they're not going to let you play one-on-one. Okay, they're not going to let you play one-on-one. Well, then maybe call a timeout so then you can create some sort of an action or create some sort of a set. Like, just do something. Like, anything. I'd rather lose trying some different things as a Nets fan than just letting, like, the Nets defense be porous and letting the Nets offense be stagnant and predictable and just mind-numbingly bad. The Nets didn't create any semblance of quality offense. And that's despite, you know, Mikal having an incredible first half, Cam Thomas having a pretty good game overall, Klax having a big effect on the game. But, yeah, what else are we going to do? I can talk enough about Jacques Vaughn. I think he wasn't the underlying reason why the Nets lost, but he was certainly one of them. It was sort of like a multitude of factors. And probably that other key factor was him choosing not to substitute out Cam Johnston for DFS or DSJ or Lonnie, who were one of those three guys. Heck, even at Trent Watford. Probably not Trent Watford, but like, absolutely, Lonnie Walker, Dennis Smith Jr., and Dorian Finney-Smith. One of those guys should have been in over Cam Johnston. Because Cam Johnston was terrible. Like, with a capital T. With a Charles Barkley, terrible. Like, 29 minutes for him, 3 of 11 from the field, 2 of 7 from 3, 1 of 2 from free throw line. Did have 6 assists, 4 rebounds, and a steal. But only the 9 points, was minus 8 in his time. And some of the shots that he was taking, like, he was... He's... It felt like, look, the Cam Johnston discussion is something that has been had a bit with Nets fans, and one that I've even been a part of and thrown out on Twitter and such, but he's average. This is an average basketballer that earned himself a four-year, $94 million contract. Now, think of the new salary cap, blah, 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 whatever, cool. But he's the 54, this season, he's the 54 highest paid NBA player. So he's in the top, there's 450 players, so he's right up there in terms of what he's getting paid. Players around the same sort of range. And again, if you follow me on Twitter, you probably know that some of these numbers are what they are. Players on similar contracts to Cam Johnson, Julius Randle, Jeremy Grant, Jordan Poole, Jaren Jackson Jr., Tyler Hero, Jalen Brunson, Kyle Kuzma, John Collins, Brook Lopez, Mike Conley, Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Simons, RJ Barrett, Jordan Clarkson, Terry Rozier, Dylan Brooks, Malcolm Brogdon. There's not a lot of players on that list that Cam Johnson is better than. And if you want to go even deeper on that list, Draymond Green, Aaron Gordon, Bruce Brown, and Mikal Bridges, who's earning less than his twin buddy. Like, Cam Johnson is not worth the money. Like, we know that. It's going to be intriguing to see whether, one, he continues to get this nepotism and treatment. Like, he's earned the contract, so we got to play him in closing stretches. Like, just play the best players. Like, it's just, the Nets had a chance to steal two upset wins on this LA road trip. And they head back home and they're versing some pretty tough teams going forward. You know, up next against the Knicks and the Timberwolves. This would have been a really crucial win and a momentum-turning win. But the inefficient and nothingness of Cam Johnson. Like, if we're going through, let's see how many times Cam Johnson across the games he's played this season has scored 20 points or more. He scored 20 points or more 4 times. He's played 34 games. 4 times he's scored 20 points or more. Like, I get that, look, and if you want me to go through it, let's take a look. He's scored 19 once, he scored 18 a couple times, he scored 17 4 times. If he was doing 17, 5, and 5, whatever, it just seems to me he gets like 9 and then 13 and then 6. Like, he's just a criminally inconsistent and ineffectual player. On defense, he's porous. He's a cone. He just has no level of physicality and dog to him that some of our other guys on this roster do have. They'd like, it's just, the Cam Johnson discussion is something that will be had for quite a while probably, and deservedly so, because this guy is playing pretty bad basketball right now. If the Nets can offload him in some semblance of a trade,
I think plenty of Nets fans will be happy, whether it's for draft equity, whether it's for expirings or whatever, because it feels like it's one step forward, two steps back for Cam Johnson, because he was having like a little mini stretch when, you know, he got back and he was looking all right. And then he sort of just goes back to this like really bad form. He's not even like a weapon from three unless he's completely and utterly open. It feels like he needs the game dictated for him. He needs everything open. Like, he made a couple of good plays against the Lakers the other night. And it just feels like, to me, for a guy, maybe I'm being too harsh on him. Maybe I should see things from the other side of the perspective. But when you're getting paid a certain amount, and he's one of the Nets' like leading contract getters, in terms of, you know, you can throw in Ben Simmons, but Ben Simmons is a completely different kettle of fish. But right now, Cam Johnson is getting paid 23 plus million dollars, and he's not playing to a 23 plus million dollar player. Simple as that. After the break, guys, I'll get to maybe a few more positive things, a few little rumblings and news around the Nets franchise.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Now, I'll get to a few positive things, because the Nets outscored the Clippers in three of four quarters today. So it was just that last quarter. The Clippers played one quality quarter of basketball and they beat the Nets. The thing is, like, Mikal Bridges had 20 points in the first half, only had six in the second half. Now, again, he re-aggravated that shin injury, you know, losing the hand a little bit and slipping down. Seemed to be a little bit of a wet spot on the floor there at Crypto, but I thought it was a really good game nonetheless from Mikal Bridges. 9 of 17 from the field, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, a block. Did have 3 turnovers, but his 3-point shooting is something, again, you know, to reiterate that, that's looking really, really good. You know, in the Nets socials with all the people impersonating Mikal Bridges' celebration, you know, the 3-point celebration. But today, you know, he led the Nets in minutes. And, you know, he got to the free throw line a little bit, but the 3-point shooting is something that is really good to see. If that continues, he continues to have that trigger from the pull-up. You know, that opening possession of the game set the tone. You know, the Nets win the tip, they tip it around, and Mikal Bridges gets a 3-pointer within 5 seconds of the clock starting. That set the tone early for how the Nets were going to attack this game, be aggressive. But it was too bad that they couldn't hang on for four quarters. But Mikal Bridges, I would say, had, you know, the first half was like a 10 out of 10 performance, and then after that, you know, closer to 5 or 6 out of 10. So if we're averaging it out, probably an 8 out of 10 game from him. But, you know, a good game nonetheless. And the fact that he could perform at the same time, you know, that Cam Thomas was 8 of 17 from the field from him. 27 minutes, would have liked to see that a little bit higher, especially when you're giving Cam Johnson 29, Spencer Dinwiddie 33, Nick Claxton 31, despite his foul trouble. But Cam Thomas was only 1 of 5 from three, was 3 of 4 from the free throw line, did tie his career high in assists. And I think it's now 3 straight games where he's had 4 or more assists. His play, and he was minus 19. I think a lot of people will look to that and go, look, Cam Thomas minus 19, led the team, was the team worse than that. But when he was out there, the team looked to have a good flow. He was making the right decisions, and it seems to me that he is just out there and not hunting his own shot, but hunting his own shot when it matters and making the right decisions. Like some of his lobs to Claxton, Trent at Watford, he was getting doubled the extra attention, but he was making all the right plays. And this is a guy that, whether he's starting or finishing games, he did finish today's game. I think you've got to sub out Cam Johnson, and whether it's Cam Thomas comes in or whoever, and Cam Johnson comes off the bench, but you can't reasonably argue that Cam Johnson provides more than Cam Thomas. I mean, Cam Thomas defended better today than Cam Johnson as well. And I think overall he has been too. And Cam Thomas has been pretty good there, especially on one-on-one occasions and isolation occasions when he's just man-to-man defense. So, look, Cam Thomas continuing to grow. Did have the four turnovers. I think some of those, you know, were his problem. Some of those weren't. I think he could have had more assists if some of the like role players, i.e. DFS, Royce and Cam Johnson, could have hit some of their three balls a little bit more effectively. But yeah, his passing now and his decision-making out of doubles, he's just being a bit more quick. And I think that comes with game reps and extended game reps. 30-plus minutes for Cam Thomas, please. Just 30-plus minutes consistently. This guy should be a tentpole of the organization moving forward. I've said that a billion times. But yeah, outside of that, I'll get to, I guess, to the rest of the stars. Nick Claxton was really good today, but it was the foul trouble that I think hurt the Nets and him. You know, he had a couple of fouls. He only had like one or two fouls at a certain point. Then he had like two in the third. And then they had to sort of sit for an extended period towards the end of that quarter. And then he got another one. And then he had to sit for quite a bit. And I think him being out of the game allowed the Clippers to really attack the Nets on defense. Because Nick Claxton, whether it's on a switch, whether it's in drop, like, he was doing a lot today. And he was quite effective. You know, his numbers, 7 to 10 from the field, 0 of 1 from 3. That 3 ball is not something I want to see. You know, the Nets haven't scored in a long time. They're only up by 6. And Clax is open from 3 from the corner. Look, it's a make or miss league. Maybe he hits that and where I'm talking about, hey, Clax is that 3-point shooter. But it felt like, to me, that was emblematic of the Nets not being able to create anything. So let's just try and ignite something with the Nick Claxton 3, which unfortunately didn't happen. 6 boards for him, 2 of them offensive, 3 assists, a steal, 2 blocks. The 5 fouls. That for me was sort of a momentum changer for him personally and more so for the team, because I think his presence, he was so important for what the Nets were doing, attacking advantages when, you know, they were going against Tice or small ball Russell Westbrook. And Clax's two-man game with Cam Thomas today, handoffs, screens, all those different sort of things, they're developing a really positive chemistry. That's nice to see. So, unfortunately, the Nets couldn't get the win, but Nick Claxton, if he had played 33 or more minutes or had a set out of foul trouble, that might have changed the trajectory of the performance. Spencer Dinwiddie, another good game from Spence, 33 minutes, 6-9 from the field, 4-6 from 3. Did have the 7 assists as well to go with 2 boards. Had a block as well for his 16 points. Now, the rumors have been swirling quite a bit. You know, HP Basketball, Matt Moore, sorry, via the Action Network, is saying that Spencer Dinwiddie is now being sought after by the Los Angeles Lakers. That'll be intriguing to see whether the Lakers can come up with a package that the Nets want. But whether it's Spencer juicing back his trade value, whether he's back in a better spot mentally, he's got a bit better of a comfort level. But his last two games have been great. And it feels like a lot of Nets players enjoy playing in Lakerland, in Los Angeles. But yeah, a good game from Spencer Dinwiddie. And hopefully this can, you know, continue when the Nets get back home to Barclays. I guess I get to Dorian Finney-Smith. I think he didn't affect the box score other than a block and 9 boards. He had been more effective there in terms of hitting one of his 3 threes or one of his 5 field goals. It would have looked a lot better for him. His defense was really good tonight, like really good. And the rebounding, you know, leading the team with 9 boards. So you take with that what you will. Now, there's teams and people out there saying that the Nets are looking for 2 firsts when it comes to a DFS. You know, I'm skeptical whether the Nets do that, whether they get 2 sort of fake firsts, like 2 late firsts, like from good teams, or 1 decent first and a second. But it'll be intriguing to see what does happen with his future in Brooklyn. But he's just a really good player. Like a really, really good player. But in saying that, you know, if you can get him for a decent price and offer him for a decent price, then you take that. And he did speak to, after the Lakers performance, you know, the rumors surrounding him. He said, just can't focus on the outside noise. That's part of it. There's nothing you can do about it. We've all got social media, so you're going to hear it. It ain't real. It's a whole bunch of chit-chat until something officially happens. I'm a Brooklyn Net, and I want to win. That's all that matters. Love that last line from DFS. And if he's on the Nets, and because he is on a he's still got a couple of years on that contract, and it is incredibly team friendly, which is what makes him a more attractive proposition for opposing teams. Then I'm cool keeping him around because he does provide so much defensively, and hopefully that three ball gets back to as good as it was earlier in the season. We were shooting like 45%, but he's been a little bit lackluster from the perimeter of late. But yeah, in saying that, the rest of the guys, Royce O'Neal, Trenton Watford, Dennis Smith Jr., Lonnie Walker off the bench. Royce has been struggling hitting the three ball, you know, and that's something that I think he needs to get back. You know, those one dribble sort of threes, he's lost that a little bit. Trenton Watford in his 12 minutes, you know, was okay. You know, only hit the one bucket, but, you know, did a few nice things here or there. DSJ, you know, his 80 minutes, 6 of 8 from the field, 1 of 2 from 3, 3 rebounds, you know, an assist. He is just a relentless driver. His athleticism, his dogged nature, you know, he's a really valuable player for this Nets team. And him or Lonnie Walker, I want to keep one or both of those guys in a Nets uniform for a long time. I think some people are talking about the mid-level for Lonnie Walker and or Dennis Smith Jr. Not and or, but one of those two. I'd love to see one of those guys, both of those guys in a Nets uniform for a long time. Lonnie Walker continuing only 10 minutes. Like, this minutes restriction is just a bit odd because when he's out there, the Nets just look better offensively because they have another option. And I think when they were struggling in that final quarter, you could have thrown Lonnie out there, could have hit a three ball, could have driven, could have hit one of his mid-ranger. Because he was 3 or 4 from the field, 2 or 2 from three, and he's just a really smooth and fluid, and he can just get a bucket when you need it. So I think I've spoken about the lack of substitutions when it came to Cam Johnson and such, but yeah, that is what it is. A few final notes I wanted to get to, guys, is that when, to speak of, like, hark on Lonnie Walker, I did a little bit of research yesterday, not sure what the numbers are after today, but when Lonnie Walker is on the floor, the Nets have a 122.9 offensive rating, and when he's off, the Nets are 114.7. So give Lonnie, that minutes restriction better go sooner rather than later, because this guy impacts the team hugely in an offensive fashion. Hugely. That number is emblematic of that. And another little rumor that we have sort of heard is that the Nets apparently are interested in Gary Trent Jr. Like, I don't see it from the Raptors. Like, this guy is a one-way player, to say the least. He doesn't have a heap of size. He's like a sort of 6'5 shooting guard. And that's all. He's sort of like the old school sort of prototypical shooting guard where he just shoots. So in saying that, this was via Matt Moore, I believe, on the Action Network. He said, not a lot of noise about the Nets. They're mentioning on the fringe of some of the big names, DeJounte Murray, Zach LaVine, Donovan Mitchell. But outside of it's going to take at least one first to get DFS or Royce O'Neal, I haven't heard much. You would think the season's slipping away, they'd pursue shaking things up, but the front office seems content to use this season to assess things, though a deal for their expiring contract seems likely. Spencer Dinwiddie, Royce O'Neal are two of those expirings. The Lakers also now have interest in Spencer Dinwiddie, which is what I alluded to earlier, but I don't get this Gary Trent Jr. interest. And this was via Matt Moore. Gary Trent Jr. is the name most frequently discussed with the Lakers and Nets among the teams with interest. Like, there's also been like some little rumblings here or there that D'Angelo Russell might come back in a Spencer Dinwiddie sort of deal. Yeah, maybe. Like, I don't really love Russell's contract, but he's playing some decent basketball in terms of his efficiency and scoring, as well as some of his playmaking. But I don't get the interest in Gary Trent Jr. because his scoring has dipped. His efficiency has dipped. I just don't like him. Like, he's on an expiring as well. Maybe if the Nets just want that as some sort of an asset, I just don't see it. Like, unless you want Gary Trent Jr., I'd rather like keep a Dinwiddie over him. So yeah, not a fan of the Gary Trent Jr. interest. Hopefully there is moves that are made that are better than that, whether it's getting garnering assets, whether it's DeJounte Murray, whoever else. So we'll see how it plays out. Hopefully the Nets get back on the winners list against their crosstown rivals in the Knicks. But thank you, as always, Nets listeners, Buzz listeners. It's always a pleasure to bring some content to you guys. Wish it was in better circumstances. Wish Jacques Vaughn had done something a bit smarter, but we are where we are. Nets world, we keep riding.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.